DJ, drop a beat.
Not another podcast.
Not another podcast.
Not another podcast.
What the hell is wrong with you people?
Not another podcast.
All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
James.
I am sick and tired of everyone telling me I'm confused.
Bryce.
We're reckless, arrogant, stupid dicks.
Big Jim.
Wubba-lubba-dub-dub. That's my catchphrase, remember?
Samantha.
I have one job on this lousy ship. It's stupid, but I'm gonna do it, okay?
Dan.
I don't know who you are, but I have a very particular lack of skills. I will never be able to find you.
Not another podcast.
Welcome to Not Another Podcast. I am James.
I'm Dan. We tried. We tried real hard. It just.
I didn't even try. I just went for it.
Yeah, fuck it. We just dive in.
Never, ever fucking works. Professional. That's what I like about this show.
Top tier. Grade A professionals here.
So, how was everyone's week?
Sam?
Oh, me, yay! it was good. It was a pretty chill week. Work was quiet.
Did you settle those cultural differences you had from last week?
What?
Did you put a beat down on some bitches?
Unless, like, we had the discussion of cultural differences, but I don't know if you're referring to something specific.
Well, you were just all up in arms, and I figured there was a reason for it, and I was wondering if you'd solved it.
Oh, I solved all the world's problems. You didn't know that? Haven't you watched the news?
Well, fake news everywhere, so
I... Like a day. God, no credit.
I just have no idea what's real anymore.
I was seriously, I have no fucking clue. So much has happened in the news. I was listening to a lot of newscasts and stuff like that at work, and I was like, God, what is happening? So, and I don't know what's true, what's right, who can you trust, you know?
Well, it's interesting that we somehow found ourselves here. Yesterday, I was at work training someone, and we got onto the discussion of Trump, and he's a Trump supporter.
Oh,
but the cool thing is he's an open-minded Trump supporter. So we had like an hour-long discussion. I know, it was weird. I should have guessed by the rainbow hair, but we had kind of a long discussion, and he laid out, you know, his thoughts and why he voted for Trump and why he avoided Bernie Sanders and everything else. And again, totally smart, and I totally got his reasoning. But then I pointed out a bunch of stuff, and he went, "Huh." Never thought about it like that.
Wah, wah.
And the cool part was, it was a well thought out, totally, we respected each other the whole time.
It was a clean and respectful conversation.
It was so
weird.
That's
so pleasant.
But I think I opened his eyes to some things that he might be looking at differently now. I don't know if I'd change his mind, but at least he's looking at it from a different perspective now, and that's cool.
That's all we can really try for, especially in these times, is just trying to open people up to the idea that your preconceptions of this thought or this situation may not be everything. So just consider that in and of itself, but try to look into it to gain evidence on your way of thinking.
Mm-hmm. It was funny too, because when I asked him, because he said he's more liberal than conservative, and when I asked him, or I didn't ask him, he just kind of said like, I didn't vote for Hillary. When I asked him why, he was like, I just didn't like her. And I find that I've noticed that like all through the campaign and everything that she ran, she is so polarizing. There is no middle ground on her. People either love her or hate her.
And, you know, at least he was honest about it.
Yeah.
He wasn't trying to argue the Benghazi situation to make her out to seem like a bad person or poor at the job, so much as he just didn't like her. And to be fair, that's kind of one of the reasons why most people vote for certain politicians. They just, it's not always their policies that they buy into so much. They just either like them or they don't.
Well, and you and I had talked about this before. I think it was you, but
might have been
this guy and I started talking about how Trump won, and it's because he's No, we did have a conversation about it because we were talking about cults and, yes, and how they work. Trump is a very charismatic person.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have the smarts to pull off a cult, but no, he's got the charisma to start one.
Yes.
And and for me, that's how he won the election. He's got so much charisma, and he's spouting off all this stuff that people can easily rally behind. He hates foreigners. I hate foreigners too.
Right.
You know, Obama screwed up the economy. I believe that too. Right. He just spouts off all this hate, but at the same time, it's all this rhetoric that these people can get behind because they're so downtrodden right now.
You know,
in 2016.
The one thing I might add to that too is there's a lot to be said for self-confidence.
Mm.
If you believe in yourself and you believe in what you're saying, people see that. They feel it more than anything. So if you're coming at, you know, a conversation with rock solid fucking ideals that in your head make absolute sense, there is no other way around it, and you address it in such a way that sparks confidence in how you're speaking about it, people tend to cling to that. They catch on and they're like, you know what? He might be onto something.
See, I lump that confidence in with the charisma. Like, mm-hmm, you've got to have the confidence for charisma to work because people, mm-hmm, can see right through that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if you're up front and you're spouting all this stuff that most of the population would agree with, if you're not confident in how you present yourself, they're not going to buy it.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that, you know, one of the things that makes this man so enigmatic is the fact that he is super confident, bordering on egomaniacal.
Yeah.
I would say crossing the border.
Hates a resort to name calling, but he's still a crusty old used tampon.
Psychopath. That's what I generally call him.
Yeah, that, you know, and it's fitting. And I hate to be, you know, very blunt about how I feel about most people in general, but he's an infantile used tampon. Yeah. He's just mad and angry. And
you know, we talk about we talk about charisma and all that stuff. And sure, he's got a lot of that confidence in spades. But you also have to look at the fact he lost the popular vote to Hillary by a lot. And
too
it was
true.
Other forces that, you know, the Electoral College is the reason he won.
Too true.
Well, and if anything, this election cycle showed us how broken our system is and what needs to be addressed.
And it's not just the Russians that broke it. It's been broken.
Oh, it's been broken for ages. You know, and, you know, yes, Obama won. But Obama won the popular and the electoral,
mm-hmm,
you know. So, I mean, he really won.
Yeah.
Hillary won the popular, but she didn't take the electoral. And the electoral is a broken system, and it's a system of a time when we didn't have the internet and we couldn't get instant results.
Right.
You know, in this day and age, there's no reason for it.
Yeah.
Will they disband it? No.
Not a chance in hell.
So, you know, because it helps the Republicans win.
Well, it helps control who wins on the whole. I mean, it almost doesn't necessarily matter what you think about it or how you feel about it so much as the Electoral College is there to choose who they feel will do the job they want them to do.
Yeah.
Whether it's, you know,
problem is they can't control Trump.
Yeah.
And here's another interesting little tidbit that I just kind of realized today. A friend of mine and I were talking about this Republican presidency as opposed to the last one. And the difference being that the last one, George W. Bush was not – he was president in name only. The Republicans were actually running the government, but everything that was being done was not really being done by W. What's interesting in this one is nothing is getting done. We have a Republican president, but the Republicans are in complete disarray. They can't get anything done. It should have been easy to get Obamacare eliminated, yet they couldn't do it.
Yeah.
The only thing they cared about was the tax reform, because they're all rich and they wanted to be even richer. So they jumped on it.
Right.
But that's really the only thing they've accomplished. Every time the budget deadline has come up, they've been within minutes of a government shutdown. And they've had to completely collapse on their ideals in order to get something passed so they can keep working.
Right.
You know?
Needless to
say. But they're not the ones on a government shutdown. They're really not the ones that suffer, because they still get paid.
Oh, yeah.
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 But fucking ridiculous.
But at the same time, they
military paychecks, but you still get your thousands upon thousands upon thousands a year. Fuck yourself.
Agreed.
Samantha, tell us how you really feel.
Quit holding back.
It's a collective. We're gonna fuck other people until we decide we want to do something.
Oh yeah, but then you have I forget who it was, but this last one that came about, you had a couple of Democrats coming up and trying to pass a bill that said, look, if the government shuts down, none of us get paid. And I when I first heard that, I laughed. I was like that's gonna pass.
I wish it would.
But there's that's to me that's like the greatest thing, because here are these government leaders realizing we can't let this happen.
Mm-hmm.
And if it does, we can't take pay.
Yeah.
Well, if our military is getting paid, there's no reason we should be getting paid. And unfortunately, the biggest problem in our government right now is greed. Everyone's looking out for number one.
It drives the force behind them. So
I really think that we as a nation should come up with a thing that says, if you're going to run for political office, you only get enough money to cover your housing, transportation, and food.
Yeah.
You have to live. So that way, if you're running for political office, you really want the job because you really want to make a difference. No one's going to fucking run knowing they're not going to make any money.
Yeah, if you're only going to
public office should be public.
Yeah.
You know? So, but again, never pass. Never happen.
I hope you're wrong.
The funny thing is,
I think we all hope you're wrong.
A career politician too, that everything should be set to term limits.
Oh yeah, I saw something today or over the weekend that showed some of the members of Congress and how long they've been in office. There's guys been in there 40 or 50 years.
Yep.
I'm sorry. Get the fuck out.
Yeah.
And they're so outdated on their policies, and they don't keep up with what is actually happening, it seems.
No, because when they go to Washington, they're disconnected. They're immediately disconnected. They have no idea what's happening or what their constituents want. You know, they have no way to tell. So we have a broken system that needs fixed badly. And unfortunately, all the best answers are on this show and no one's listening.
Not a one.
So we have succeeded in failing once again, my friends.
Well,
or failed in succeeding.
We pat ourselves on the back, but you know, I just don't feel like I earned it.
Oh my god. So, both of my dogs are laying on me and they're driving me nuts.
Well, they love you.
They do, but oh my god. They're driving me crazy right now.
And they're breathing right in the microphone. Right. Either that or that's you.
Sam, are you okay?
Sam, stop breathing so heavy. It's weird. Would you like to be left alone? Do you need to brush your teeth for a really long time?
Powder your nose.
Mama's going to the bathroom. Uh-huh. Might take a while.
Might take a while.
Anyway.
So, Sam, you saw Ready Player One. What'd you think?
It was a terrible movie.
What?
It was so bad.
Wow, I am completely in the minority.
I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
It's so bad.
What is bad about it?
Okay. Sam, fire up. Get him.
Right when I went to see it, like, ow, damn it, her elbow is right in my side boob. Okay.
Pretty sure that wasn't in the movie.
No, that was the tagline. Ready Player One. Right elbow in the side.
That's how you defeat Menstruate.
Elbow in the side boob.
Ow! Okay. Go away, dog. Okay. Oh my goodness gracious me. Okay, that's better. Oh, and she farted. This is a great day, you guys.
Feeling relieved. That's good. That's good.
I think that's the title of the show, though. Right in the side boob.
Right in the side boob.
Not another podcast. Right in the side boob. So, anyway.
It follows last week's episode of Hard German.
Hard German right in the side boob. So why is it that you found displeasure in Ready Player One, Sam?
I've read the book.
Well, there was your
first
mistake.
Well, that's the first problem, yeah, because I read the book, too. And I vastly enjoy the book more than the movie. But for what it was, I enjoyed the movie. See, I recommended to Danny that he go see the movie and then read the book.
Yeah, because I've done neither, but honestly...
No, exact opposite.
I explained it to my wife. It's like, you know, don't get me wrong. It looks like it could be fun. But for me, it's a nostalgia bomb that I just don't need to pay $20 for her and I to go watch. You know what I mean?
Yeah, wait for it to come out on Hulu.
That's kind of where I'm at.
So, okay, so the book, I thought the book was all right. The first half was much better than the second. I liked the book. The movie actually made me like the book better. Ryan and I'm really weary of these super CGI movies. I mean, Valerian was junk.
Yeah.
Jupiter Ascending is junk. You know, so you have these beautifully aesthetic movies. And I knew the movie was going to be pretty. It's actually not as pretty as I expected it to be. But you have these beautifully made movies. And all this time and energy goes into it. But they skimp on the script. They skimp on the story. It did not look as impressive as I thought it was going to. Because right now, this massive level of CGI is like, I felt it was very stock standard. There was nothing that blew me away. There was nothing new or refreshing. This is becoming like standard. So there's nothing really like, oh, that's cool anymore. And we saw it in 3D. Didn't realize we got the 3D tickets because Ryan got them online. But the 3D... I could have just been watching it 2D. There was nothing popping out at you. There was absolutely nothing special about it being 3D either. So those are just like, but that's not what the story. Now, all the acting was terrible, except for the guy who played Halliday. He was great. He's the only redeeming quality in that movie. Actually, the little kid who played Cho, he was cute. There's a couple glimmering funny parts of script that were well done, but just it poor timing, poor acting, stock standard graphics. They changed this. Now, the reason Ryan and I decided to go see it in the theaters instead of waiting for it to come out on Hulu, because that was our original plan, because I thought from the very first moment I heard there was going to be a movie, there's no way it's going to be good. Absolutely no way.
Way to be an optimist.
But the reason we went to go see it was because all the reviews that were coming out were saying it's all right. And I have a couple friends that liked it, and I was like, okay, I generally trust your guys' movie judgment. And
never again.
Never again ruined it. So, I mean, you know, in movies, you're going to like what you like, you're going to not like what you don't like. But it was a bad movie.
Now, I have a question for you.
It was not done well. It was poorly made. And I think it was just...
So, Danny, you're going to love it.
Well, I have a question for you, Sam, and this kind of goes to what you're talking about. Do you find that movies that rely too heavily on CGI lack in shock and awe?
Yes.
Good, because least you and I are on the same page for some degree.
That's where they lack. That's not where they lack, because you can do some really cool stuff with CGI. It's not... Movies that rely too heavily on CGI... lack in character development and script.
Yeah, alright, I buy that. Because a lot of the times for me, like you brought up Valerian, and it's like, that movie for me felt like it had potential to be really fucking fun and a lot of really cool shit.
Made it.
But at the same time, as I was watching it, I was like, unfortunately for me, I'm still at the age where I can tell the fucking difference between practical effects and CGI, and a lot of the times those two do not marry very well. And that movie was exactly a prime example of where CGI does not necessarily mix well with practical. And for me, it took me completely out of giving a shit for the characters of the story, aside from the terrible acting and gross fucking plotline. It took too much away from me. Like, I can enjoy a stupid fun movie because it's stupid fun, but it has to be entertaining. That, to me, felt like they paid their CGI staff maybe not enough and just said, nah, fuck it. We can't do this shit practical. Well, we could, but nah, fuck it. We'll just do it on CGI.
Well, here's the thing that...
This movie takes place in a digital world, so I'm fine with the massive CGI. But it was still done at the expense of good scripting.
Agreed. Well, I don't know what I'm agreeing. I just, in general, agree with
you
your
will
sentiments.
You eventually agree with me.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like, for me, watching the previews and hearing all the little bumps and whatnot and them using, like, the music from Back to the Future, it's like, all right, Spielberg, I get it. You used to be really cool. Please remind us why you're still cool.
Like, it made me really sad because Spielberg's brought us, like, some of the most amazing things.
Right.
And he's also brought us some horrid dog shit, and this goes in the dog shit pile.
Fair enough. James,
and
your rebuttal?
Really unfortunate.
I disagree on so many things.
Well, that's all we needed from James. Thank you very
much. I don't disagree that this is not one of Spielberg's best films.
That's easy to say without even watching it.
Yeah. And I do agree that there's something when you get too much CGI, when it becomes too much of a spectacle movie, there's not a lot of script. But I went into this movie knowing that that was going to happen because I knew the book.
Fair enough.
And the book is, and we discussed this the other day, the book is essentially an updated Charlie and the Chocolate Factory with a lot of nostalgia thrown in.
That's another thing, too. When you brought that up, it always gives me pause when I'm able to watch a movie and I can directly reference it to something else. Like, for instance, when I went and watched Avatar, because, you know, everyone had their fucking hairs all curled up in their ass because of that movie.
Yeah, they did.
And I went and I watched it, and I watched it in 3D, and was genuinely unimpressed. The storyline, I was like, dude, this is Dances with Wolves. I don't fucking care anymore.
Maybe that's why I enjoyed it, because I never saw Dances with Wolves.
I love Dances with Wolves for concept, but at the same time, there are hundreds of other stories, you know, not to sound like an asshole too much, but the white savior saving the native tribe.
The fucking asshole.
It's been done very many, many times. And unfortunately, it was just one of those things watching Avatar. I was like, guys, I've seen this shit. Just without all the computer graphics. And the boobs.
One of the biggest reasons Ryan and I decided to give this movie a chance was we had discovered that, and I mean, you knew that this was going to happen anyway, but it was officially announced. Some of the reasons you're seeing some weird stuff in the previews that weren't in the book was because the movie, there was no way, they were never going to get the rights to everything.
Right.
And they did not get the rights to a lot of stuff that was referenced in the book. So we were like, okay, so half the previews that don't make sense to us if you read the book, we can forgive that because now we know this portion. So it's like, okay, cool. I can live with that.
Right.
But they completely rejiggered absolutely everything and things that did not need to be replotted or twisted around. It was just unnecessary and it was rushed and it was just, let's get through this story as fast as we can. And people just loved the CGI and that was it.
I agree. They changed so much in the book, but at the same time, I understood why they changed it. And again, Danny, we discussed this. Sitting down and watching this guy go through a Dungeons & Dragons campaign so he can play Joust with a demon, just so he can act out all Matthew Broderick's parts in War Games, would have been extremely boring. It's easy to put it down on a book and have people imagine it and maybe get people to go, War Games? What the hell is that movie? I'll go watch it.
Right.
So, you know, having a big race, you know, a big car race with, you know, fucking the T-Rex from Jurassic Park and King Kong and...
Which was a 90s reference, and that was the King Kong from the 2005 movie.
So. But see, the thing is, if you really look, it's not just about 80s references. the references are pop culture as a whole.
Yeah, but and if you're going into on just the 80s in the book, but they had to put 90s stuff in there because they couldn't fill it with all of 80s stuff.
Well, and let's be
but
fair,
if you pay attention in the book, there's stuff from 90s and beyond too. They reference Next Generation, Star Trek Next Generation, that was 90s.
Late 80s, early 90s, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying. Yeah. Whatever.
No one cares what you think, Danny.
Hey!
Thank you, Danny!
Step to my Star Trekery, bro.
I love it. Yeah, so... But, you know, it... They're trying to please too many people with one thing.
Well, think
of the most amount of money, because all this movie was a cash grab. There's nothing, there's zero, there's very little redeeming about it. And then they shove in this forced, love story.
That was actually in the book. It wasn't forced.
I know it was, but
how it came across.
It was more natural in the book than it was in the movie.
But it didn't make sense in the movie. It didn't. You did not need them to have a love story. It could have just been friends, and then you infer the rest. It really just it was so forced and so compact. Just it was like they were trying to push a tiger inside of a tiger.
Get in there.
They were trying to fit 50 pounds of crap in a 30 pound bag, you know, and just. This has got to work. We've got to do this. And it was just... Oh, so terrible.
Just sit on the lid and then hit the latch. You'll be all right.
Yeah, like when you're trying to pack for a trip and you have to sit on your suitcase. It was just so...
Honestly, because of the way the book was, I think if they had spread it out, because you've essentially got three keys, so there's three quests... You could have.
If you say move that into three movies, I'm gonna scream.
Ready Player One, Two, and Three.
But see, here's the thing, though. By doing that, they could have spent more time on the story and less time on the spectacle.
Which it would have really benefited. That would be a huge benefit.
See, I would even go so far as to just split it into two movies. Yeah. Make your first movie about the first and second key.
And
that's half the book.
Always been a big fan of taking a book and giving it at least two movies to get a good treatment out of it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like...
Now,
that...
for some stories, you could go one, because The Hobbit could have been one movie.
One.
That, yeah,
however,
I
would have been okay if they had done The Hobbit in two and thrown in parts of The Silmarillion. I would have been okay with that. But what they did with The Hobbit was just Jackson going, "You're gonna pay me all the money."
See, they could have done a 2.5 to 3 hour movie of The Hobbit and done a clean, concise movie. And if they really wanted to, they could have made it their own separate movie to bridge the gap
for The Silmarillion or something.
Yeah,
like, yeah. And honestly, I would
have.
And
people
okay
would have gone.
Oh, dude, people went anyway.
I actually walked out of the second movie and did not see the third movie. And I didn't see the third movie until it was on DVD.
I did not go.
I still haven't seen the third movie.
I saw the first movie in theaters, and after that, I was like,
oddly enough,
this,
the third movie is the best of the three.
Yeah,
really?
That's,
you know what? Don't think I've seen the second one either. Dan, I think I did the same thing you did.
Yeah.
I saw the first one in theaters. Ooh, yeah, mm-hmm. I may have not seen the second one either.
Because, again, you got to understand, the first time my wife and I were in the theater and we heard the dwarf singing the song of the Misty Mountain, like it was black screen, we heard that tune and I was like, ooh, okay. And then I heard far over the Misty Mountain. Oh, dude, I got so fucking excited.
Oh, dude,
my
everyone
wife and
was
I
pumped.
Just like, yes!
Everyone was pumped for The Hobbit.
Went
but then...
and watched that fucking movie, and then they spoiled it and told me that it was going to be three parts.
Can
and
I tell you? Can I tell you when I was done with it?
Ooh, it makes me mad.
When they took the scene with Smaug and Bilbo
mm-hmm.
and turned it into a chase montage
mm-hmm.
with all the dwarves.
Mm-hmm.
And it became like a Looney Tunes routine where the hobbits are going and then Smaug goes. And then it was like the worst. I looked at my wife and said, we're leaving now. And she was into it because she loves those movies.
Right.
She was like, what? I was like, we're fucking done.
This is stupid. And again,
and I had to, what was worse is I had to, on the way home, I had to explain why I was fed up with it.
Yeah. Well, and again,
he comes over to me a little over halfway through Ready Player One, and he's like, do you want to go? And I was like, nope, we've made it this far. And I couldn't
right.
stop laughing for like 5 minutes because of how bad it was. I was like, honey, we paid for these seats. We are sticking this out. We made this decision together.
And again, that's one of those things, too, where it's like, there's only been two movies I've ever walked out of in the theater. And one of them was The Aviator, because I got so fucking bored, I didn't care.
Oh, I love that movie.
Oh, that's such a boring movie.
It's so fucking boring.
It's so boring.
Dude, we were fidgeting in our seats and shit, just like, this is stupid, let's just go.
I watched it
at
home and my ass went to sleep.
Right.
That's how bad it was. I'm in my own house, I could get up and turn it off.
Right.
But I'm like, nope, I fucking put this in, I'm watching it till the end. Fuck me, I hate myself.
Obviously.
Incredible, that's beautiful movie.
The second movie I ever walked out of was Silent Hill 2.
Was what?
Silent Hill 2.
Oh, I haven't seen that one.
I was so happy with Silent Hill the movie. I was genuinely impressed. I was like, yes, somebody actually fucking listened. They played the game. They followed the rules. They followed the base idea. I fucking love it. Yes, they changed up a few characters. It's not father and daughter. It's, you know, mother and daughter, which I was fine with. I didn't care. But the main characters were there. The heart of the town was well represented. The feel of the game was well represented. And the genuine cliffhanger of what the fuck is going on was not quite done as well as the games did. The games gave you very much an air of, we're not quite sure what the fuck is wrong with this town, but shit's fucked up. They give you kind of ideas, and they give you, you know, little cults that build up within the town because of how fucked up it is. This movie definitely had painted it in, well, this is why. So we were really happy with number one. I was genuinely impressed, and I was like, yes, they're coming out with a number two. Fucking sweet. Let's see what we do. Went to that fucking shit show, and I have never been so fucking pissed off in a theater in my entire life. I was like, okay, way to take every character that you did so well building up and just shit all over everyone. And then take the town that I love so very much and just go, nah, we're good. It's like, dude, are you fucking kidding me? And the acting, nothing personal. Jon Snow, you know, he's a good guy. He was the worst fucking character for that movie. And it's like, dude.
I have a thing where I try never to blame actors for their performances in movies.
I do.
Because... there's a trifecta. Actors are never wholly responsible for their performance because there's two other factors that go into it. There's the script and there's the direction.
And
I agree with that, yeah. Because if you have a great actor, they can save a poor script, but a poor script cannot save... Like, a good script can't save a poor actor.
Well, because I will give you a perfect for instance. I think we can all agree George Clooney, pretty goddamn talented actor.
Yeah. For the most part.
Batman Forever.
Oh my god, yes, it was awful.
Oh, come on.
I'm sorry, honest.
His bits in that movie were still better than Arnold Schwarzenegger's bits. Come on.
And I fucked up. It was actually Batman and Robin, not Batman
Forever.
Batman
and Robin, yeah. Batman Forever was Val Kilmer.
And again,
and
did
you like George Clooney or Val Kilmer?
I liked Val Kilmer.
I did too, actually.
But again, shit movie.
Yeah,
it was a shit
great.
Script. It was a shit director.
It really was. Well, and they tried so hard to basically run with the ship that Tim Burton had built.
And they just
drilled it right into the fucking
No.
They're like, fuck it, we're just going to go back to like Adam West-style Batman meets
No,
New
do
Gotham.
You not know any of that? So Tim Burton leaves. Mm-hmm. They hire Joel Schumacher.
Right.
And Joel goes, fuck everything Tim Burton did. I want neon. I want... bright, shiny stuff. I want...
But
Joel,
still, full
Joel
bondage
Schumacher,
leather suit.
The only movie Joel Schumacher has done that is worth anything is Lost Boys.
That's fair. That's fair.
Everything else is shit.
Yeah.
What else has he done? I don't know off the top of my head.
Batman and Robin and Batman Forever.
You need to know more.
That's pretty much all I can think of.
I'll see if I can pull him up.
Joel Schumacher is flamingly gay. So that should explain the suits in the Batman movies. Mm-hmm.
You know especially who else in gay? Clive Barker.
Yeah, but he's also really twisted in the head.
Well, he's also lost a great deal of his
stereotype
nuts.
Is what I'm saying.
A Time to Kill 8mm, which actually was a pretty good movie for as fucked up as it was.
Oh, 8mm, yeah. That was fucking Schumacher?
Yeah, that was Schumacher.
What the hell?
Yeah, he's done a lot of shit, honestly. He's had a couple of decent ones. I never watched number 23, but that was just...
That oh, number 23 is twisted.
Yeah.
It's really good.
But like 8mm, that was a really good movie.
Yeah.
So I know he
had apparently Schumacher went dark.
Yeah.
Because that's all after Batman. Maybe he went, you know what? This neon shit isn't working for me.
Yeah, no, it just doesn't.
Yeah, he learned his lesson.
right.
Or he was just in such a depressive funk that he was like, okay.
St. Elmo's Fire, he was also the writer on. Cousins, Flatliners, Dying Young, Falling Down, The Client. Batman Forever, Time to Kill, Batman and Robin, 8mm, Flawless, Tigerland, Bad Company, Phone Booth, Phantom of the Opera, number 23, Blood Creek, 12, Trespass, House of Cards, episodes in chapter 5 and chapter 6.
So what we've learned here is he's a fairly competent screenwriter.
And not a bad director when it comes right down to it. He just wanted to take a big, fat, steaming dump all over Batman.
Maybe what it is Burton insulted him or something at one point, so he just kind of took a giant shit on Burton's legacy.
Just like, oh, yeah, I usually go dark, but fuck you. That's your thing. Eat shit. Well, and that was the thing, too. It's like the city was still gaudy, and it was still very gothic in its nature, but yeah, the neon was the new flash to bring light to an otherwise black and gray and blue landscape. So I buy that, but at the same time, yeah, he took a big steaming dump all over Batman Forever and Batman and Robin. But again, Clooney still did a lot better than anybody else in that movie.
But again, it was a terrible movie, but you can't, you really can't lay that at the feet of George Clooney because he tried his best.
He could have chosen not to do it. Just saying.
Okay, Warner Brothers comes to you and goes, Danny, we need you as Batman.
Okay.
Exactly.
How much you paying me, motherfuckers? Because I'll tell you this much, it's one of those things, too, where it's like, we'll get it when you're a starving actor.
We'll give you $20,000 and you get to keep the bat suit.
No. Not worth my time, thank you very much.
You're not an actor.
Fassbender does not turn down any jobs. He says yes to all of it, whether it's bad or good.
Well, and that's the thing, too. It's like, if you don't have a strong career, like Clooney had at the time, enough money in his pocket to not have to do Batman and Robin. He could have walked away and been like, well, fuck you guys, I still have money.
Yeah, but
a
see,
starving
here's...
actor,
he didn't have the same
mentality
as Fassbender as... I like my craft, I like my art, and I'm going to say yes to whatever comes along.
And that's
but here's something to think about, too, in regards to Clooney and Batman and Robin. The money he made on that allowed him to do whatever film he wanted to, and he has never had to take a shit film after that.
Well, in all fairness, I think he made enough was one of the main reasons why Clooney didn't have to worry too much about money in general around the time. I mean, he was already kind of the face of the show for quite a while. And he became, you know, the fucking world's sexiest man multiple
years
in a
row
because of that stupid shit.
Bank. He signed a really good deal for Batman and Robin.
Well, and you'd have to at that point. It's like, yeah, all right, you pay me the same as Clooney, I'll be fucking Batman too. And I'll shit all over it too.
You are nowhere near the level of Clooney, my friend. You will take the $20,000 in the bat suit,
really,
or you won't act.
A knife in my back. Jeez, bro.
That wasn't your back. I did it right in your front. I looked you right in the eye as I stuck that in.
Well, and you know, that's the thing, though. It's like, honestly, yeah, $200,000, I'd probably do it just out of sheer principle. But then again, I'm not an actor. People would know who the fuck I was, and probably by the end of it, wouldn't give a shit.
No, they just...
I'd be a running joke, maybe, if I was lucky. And other than that, they'd be like, yeah, fuck
that'd
that
be
guy.
Danny walking up the red carpet to the premiere. I hope I'm a running joke. Fingers
Come
crossed.
Come on, fuckers.
I can take it. I got a thick skin.
Why is he here? Yes! Woo! Someone remembered who the fuck I was. You know, and...
They'd never remember his name, but they remember his performance.
You're that guy. You're the shit Batman. Yes. Yes, I
yes,
am.
Yes, I am.
And I got paid
like
for
Tommy
it.
Like Tommy Wiseau, you know, the worst movie in the world, and he's like... Okay, I'll take it.
Well, you kind of have to at some point because, I mean, either you're a crying lump of mess because people laugh at what you thought was your Mona Lisa, or you just play along with it and just go, yeah, yeah, it's funny, isn't it? It's great. I'm so glad
that's
you guys
why,
like it.
That's why it's too funny.
Right? Because then when you fail, people aren't laughing, and you're not sure if that was what you were going for in the first place.
But I think there's been a lot of terrible movies that were laid at the feet of the actors where you have to stop and go, well, the actor's only one part of it.
True.
And yeah, they make, you know, specific choices in the movie, but well, yeah. The director doesn't step in and go, no, let's not do that. Or right. The script writer turns in a shit script, and you can only do so much with a shit script.
True.
You know?
And that's a perspective that has only come out in the last few years. Because, you know, back in the day, you didn't have all this behind-the-scenes stuff. You didn't have Twitter. You didn't have this direct access we do to these people that we do now. So you could only rely on the person on camera for a very, very long time. So that is the first knee-jerk reaction is to say, well, that actor's bad.
Oh, no, and I don't disagree with that.
Look at it more and more saying, ooh, but there's other factors that we know about now.
Right.
Yeah, but there should have been back then, too, because when you go to a movie, there's credits to say who directed it and who wrote it.
Right, but at the same time,
you
think of them as more as motion direction,
the reason,
not so much as performance direction.
I think that the reason, and even now, even when we can look and know all this stuff that you know, it's still the actor's the one we relate to. The actor's the one we see on screen. So everything gets laid there.
Right.
I don't think it's fair, but I understand that that's the reason why is because when you watch a movie... The only connection
to.
You have is through the actors.
Right. And if they can't make it believable, then nobody could. But at the same time, that's fair to be said of a lot of movies where it's like the actor's performance was lacking. Like, whether they just didn't have the gumption to do it, or maybe they just weren't into it or didn't feel it or whatever it was, didn't do it. You can usually tell it's like this person literally is either... so new that they're terrified to be on screen, or they're so old they just don't fucking give a shit anymore. Case in point, I learned out about something kind of upsetting. Anthony Hopkins, he's one of the type of actors who will read over his lines literally over 300 times to the point where it becomes so... he doesn't have to think about it. It just becomes nature to him.
He's a method actor.
But the problem I've found with that is what ends up happening with Anthony Hopkins when he does stuff like that is it becomes almost deadpan. He's delivering the lines like he's just at a table read, you know? He's just trying to get them out. He's not even trying to put emotion into it anymore because the emotion's gone. I mean, you can look at something like Hannibal Lecter. That movie was perfect for him because Hannibal Lecter was kind of deadpan in his portrayal of how he talked to people, how he dealt with them. He was always cool, calm, and collected. But then you get something that requires more emotion, more stress, you know, more duress, like the movie The Rite, I think it was, where he's basically an old man exorcist, you know, training up the new young buck. During the process of the exorcism, you'd think he was making an order at fucking Denny's. There's just nothing there. He lost all of what potentially could have been a duressful situation by just deadpanning the fuck out of it. So again, under that, I do hold him completely accountable for that because the directors aren't going to walk up to Anthony Hopkins and go, you know, could you, you know, step it up a little bit?
A good director would, though. You have to.
You have to, but they don't, especially when you become somebody like Anthony Hopkins, who is so well known. They tend to just let him do it. And they're just like, no, that was great. That was beautiful. We'll figure it out and make it work for you the way that you do it.
Well, see, and that's one thing. Then at that point, it falls at the feet of the director for not coaxing more out of his actor. It's not Anthony Hopkins' fault. Because the director was too, you know, starstruck to go, okay, Anthony, that was great, but I need more from you than just delivering the line.
Right.
And the thing is Anthony Hopkins isn't alone. There's a lot of actors that directors are too afraid or too intimidated by. But then you get actors like James Cameron, who's like, I don't give a fuck who you are. You do it my way or I recast you.
Yeah. And that's fair, but again...
I was just going to bring that up. The same thing can be said with overbearing directors.
Yes.
Really well-known directors is the actors don't want to question them, especially these new kids coming up. Because all these kids, like in Ready Player One, could have been really good. Like, I love the girl. The girl who played Artemis.
Olivia Cooke.
I loved her in... She was good in... Bates Motel. So I was like, oh, I like her. But the... Everyone was just vacant the whole time, and it was bad. But
tell us how you really feel,
all
Sam.
All these new up and coming actors aren't gonna push their boundaries when they really should.
Right.
But also, it's on the director to make a welcoming, warm environment. Like you've got Andy Muschietti, who just did It, and those kids were fantastic, and he took the time to be with them, to make them comfortable, to make this like nice experience for them.
And it becomes believable too.
Well, and look at it too, that guy's working with, for the most part, you know, fairly unknown actors. They're all young kids. The one who'd done the most was Finn Wolfhard, who'd done Stranger Things. Right. The rest of them I had never seen in anything. So, you know, there's that. But then you look at it with the people from Ready Player One. And from what I can tell, the one girl was on Bates Motel. The one guy had worked the main bad guy was Director Krennic from Rogue One.
Gotcha.
But most of these guys, it's their first or second movie, and who are they working with? Steven fucking Spielberg.
Yeah, but Spielberg's been known to get good reactions out of people.
But let's look at his...
Especially unknowns.
We just found out he's like 71. He's getting up there. He doesn't really have the chops to do this stuff anymore.
Oh, age makes you more of an asshole.
If you have passion for something, your age does not matter. You're gonna push through it.
And thank you for making my point for me. You made the point that I was about to...
Spielberg dropped the ball?
Steven Spielberg doesn't give a shit. He doesn't have the fucking... He does not have the passion for this that he once did. He hates fucking working with kids.
Obviously.
And he just doesn't have the patience for it. So why else would he do a CGI movie? Because he doesn't have to deal with the actors so much anymore.
But it's not like he has to make movies anymore either.
He doesn't have to.
No, he doesn't.
But here's a guy who's got a legacy.
Yeah, I know. And your legacy is maintained by not producing more shit movies.
Which is why he should have stopped a while ago.
George A. Romero is a perfect example.
I would thank you again. Making my point for me.
He had passion. He had dedication. But his movies were genuinely all pretty much the same.
And they just got worse and worse. George Romero got stuck on a specific genre.
He got typecast for his own type of casting.
And that's all he made. He never ventured out.
Well, yeah, not really, because he loved that feel.
And that's
that
fine, but why not venture out try something new instead of letting your passion strangle you to death?
Well, and here's another thing, too. We were talking about the idea of recasting movies and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it, if you will. Pirates of the Caribbean, and it's right behind your head, which is why I brought up. But can you imagine any other actor at all pulling off Jack Sparrow
than
Johnny Depp? Better than Johnny Depp.
Yes.
Name him.
Who?
Oh, give me some time here.
No, you had your answer already, baby. Come on.
Here's the thing with Johnny Depp and Jack Sparrow. Over the course of, what is it, four movies now?
Oh, God, no. I think we're into five now.
Is it five?
Five or upwards of six.
Johnny Depp has become a parody of himself over the course of these movies.
But I'm talking about number one.
Number one?
Number one. I'm saying number one, The Curse of the Black Pearl. Tell me that you know another actor who could have pulled off that character as flawlessly and made us all fall in love with the Pirates of the Caribbean as much as Johnny Depp did. Because it was his portrayal that built that character, that made that character believable and likable.
I'm not arguing that, but you could ostensibly get almost any actor, put him in, give him the same stage direction with the same script.
Well, that was the thing, though. What Johnny Depp did with that character was...
But that's not unique. Well, that's not unique. And yeah. Again, anyone could have done that. It's... Okay.
But could...
Wait. I'll give you a prime example.
All right.
Jack Nicholson's Joker.
Okay.
Versus Heath Ledger's Joker.
Okay. Different creatures, different movies. You put Heath Ledger in the 1990 Batman.
It would have been a great fucking movie.
No, it wouldn't have worked because he wouldn't have had the time to change it, to morph it, to turn it into something else. Because let's be fair, up till that 90s Batman, the Joker was fucking Adam West's Joker. He was a goof.
He perpetually
got caught.
You're talking on screen.
No. And I'm saying the comic book series had him kind of campy and kind of dorky for 40 years.
By the time that movie came out, when Joker was first introduced,
right,
he was more of a Heath Ledger Joker. We're talking like 1940s Joker.
Yeah,
when he was introduced... Yes, it was.
He wasn't that dark.
Yes, it was.
Because again,
to the point that they were mandated, you have to lighten him up.
Right.
Because they weren't selling comics because it was so freaky.
But what
to
I'm saying
kids.
Is,
remember, too, at the time, only kids were buying comics.
Well, they were supposed to be the only ones.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they went through a whole campy phase with the Joker, and that's why when 1960s came out, they had a very, you know...
Yeah.
Around,
you just won't talk.
Around 1982, Joker started slipping back into more of his psychotic stuff. To the point that when they made the movie in 89,
they still wanted the campy ass Joker, which is why
you do not know this. Nicholson's only reference for the Joker was Cesar Romero.
Yeah.
He did not read the comics, had no interest in it. They had to pay him so much money to get him into the movie. He did not want to do it at all.
So what you're telling me is when they write it and they produce it and the person, the actor, only has one frame of reference to go off of, then that's what they bring. And are you telling me that Jack Nicholson's Joker was bad?
Yeah.
No, it was awesome.
Oh,
it was wonderful.
No. It was awful.
Okay. When it comes to that movie, one of the things that I always say is you have to look at the time that it came out. And at that time,
you couldn't have brought
it. That was considered really dark.
Yeah.
At that time,
yes.
And that's what I'm saying. It's like you could not have had Heath Ledger's Joker back then.
No, it would have been
a rated X movie.
Yeah, it didn't exist.
You would have not sold tickets to that movie at all.
Exactly.
And the reason they pay these certain actors to do this shit is so they can sell more tickets. They need those big names on the billboards. But... Or at least they think they do. They really don't. They still do. Are you kidding? Have you seen...
I don't know.
The only reason that movie stayed cast the way it was because she just came off of Twilight. Like, he just came off of Thor, and that was one of the worst movies ever.
Yes, it was.
So it was a pure cash grab, casting two of the most miscast people, and one of them is actually talented. So it was like, oh, well, that sucks.
Boo. But the sad part is...
Kristen Stewart is not talented.
How dare you? But that was the thing. It's like with this situation we're talking about, though, although Heath Ledger's Joker was immaculate in his own right and in his own movie, if you'd have taken that Joker and thrown it into the, well, I guess it would have been early 90s, wouldn't it? Or late 80s.
1989,
yeah. So if you'd have thrown him back in that movie would have fucking tatered. And Batman would have died a long time ago because they weren't ready for that level of a Joker. So his Joker versus the Joker we got later are completely polarized for obvious reasons. People were ready for Heath Ledger, and when he came full force, it was impressive. It was incredible. And he was incredibly talented to pull that off the way he did. But what I'm saying...
All right. Even a lot of actors back at that time weren't ready to perform something like that.
Mm-mm.
Because you look at when movies started in, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s, you have this huge sweep of this massive overacting.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone knows it's a performance. It wasn't meant to be real. It was just entertainment. And it's grown so much, and it's evolved so much into all these different methods of acting, and people are going nutty because they're going into these characters. But
right.
People weren't ready to perform stuff that dark on such a massive scale yet either.
Well, and here's kind of to my point of it with Jack Sparrow. Now, mm-hmm. in 20, 30 years, give or take, or I guess it'll probably be only like 15 years, I guess, if we were going off of that. No, yeah, about 20 years. In 20 years from now, we could get another Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl, and completely recast it with a whole new cast showing more of the nittier, dirtier, most grotesque side of pirates. Disney just straight up, for some reason, loses their shit and says, nah, fuck it, let's do it as real as possible. And then you would...
Where they went, I don't want to be a kid anymore.
Right, yeah, fuck it. But that's the thing. We could, in theory, get a different Jack Sparrow in 20 years when the audiences out there are maybe more prepared to see the scurvy, riddled, monster, mucus, gross, nasty fucking things that pirates really were. Maybe we could get a different Jack Sparrow, but it would never have been the Jack Sparrow that started us off in the first place. And that's what I'm saying. What Johnny Depp did for that character was iconic to himself. He made that movie his movie, because if you had cast anybody else, they wouldn't have done what he did. And for that reason, the movies may or may not have been that popular. But that's what I'm saying. When it comes down to putting some of the responsibility on the shoulders of the actors, it's like sometimes an actor makes a movie. Sometimes an actor is just in a movie. And you can usually tell, because it'll be the first person you remember when somebody brings that movie up. Oh, goddamn, I love that fucking movie. He was great in that. Just like The Dark Knight. I mean, Gary Oldman wasn't bad in The Dark Knight, but it wasn't his movie. All the other characters in that movie weren't bad, but it wasn't their movie. Heath Ledger made that movie because of his ability to act, and his love for that character and what he brought to it made it so much more significant. If you'd have put anybody else in that shoes, you might have had something similar, but it wouldn't have been the same. Hell, Harvey Dent probably would have stole the show.
And I don't disagree with that, and that goes back to what we were saying. There are three reasons, because even if Heath Ledger had done everything he did, but you got it in a script like Dark Knight Rises.
Again, there's
three factors that go into every movie. Yes, an actor can come in and steal the movie.
Oh, yeah.
But if the script is bad and the direction's bad, all three have to work in tandem.
I agree. But again, there is some responsibility on the actor's part.
I'm not saying that there's not. An right. actor has to do his job.
And has to be able
but
to
But an actor can only do job. So much... Because the director is directing him and he's following a script.
Right.
You know? If an actor just comes into a movie and improvs the whole thing, then it's you lay it all at the feet of the actor.
Right.
But that's not how movies work.
Right.
You know?
Well,
so if a movie's good, you remember the actor. If a movie's bad, you remember the actor.
Right.
And the actor always gets the blame or the praise. But a director worked on it too, and so did a writer.
But then again, therein lies the responsibility of the director and the writer. It's like, if you want something to be done a certain way, you need to make it well known as a director. Same can be said for a writer. If you want a story to be told a certain way, you need to make that your responsibility to get on board with the director, who will get on board with the actors. And as we were talking about, Sam, how did you feel about Ready Player One?
Piece of junk.
Failure. The writer's still alive. Steven Spielberg is hanging in there. this was a fail as far as that was concerned. As far as Sam's concerned, I haven't seen it yet, so I'm only going off a point of reference. But I see where the frustration lies. We have a writer who is still very much alive, so there's no reason why the script could have gotten so murdered and had them sign off saying, yep, no, I like this. So that's their responsibility to their own story, their own source material. It's their responsibility to work with Spielberg to say, hey, this is what I need to get for these characters. This is where I have them going. This is where I want them to be. This is what I'm shooting for. Look at what happened with George R.R. Martin and Game of Thrones. He's got his fingers so fucking deep in the ass of the directors of that show. He's like, no, you do not fuck this up. Now, we can cut some shit because time. I get that. But at the same time, don't fuck this up. So it's like... Well, and,
he has nothing to do with the show anymore. It hasn't for a couple seasons.
Well, and that may be true, but up until that point, he made sure his source material that he loved and he wrote and people connected with was well represented and respected.
Yeah. And technically, he only cut ties so he can focus on writing the new book, which still isn't done. But before he cut ties, he gave them the outline.
Right.
Yes.
Of all the books. So they're following, they're still following his source material, and he is still available for consultation.
Right.
So it's not like he's completely out of
it. Well, they did that on the respects that they were worried that Martin wouldn't make it to finish the books or the TV series for that matter. So as a part of their deal, they had him say, okay, tell us how you want this shit to end your way, because we need to know now. Before it...
Because you might die!
Yeah, you're too fucking old for this shit.
But he's only in his 70s, right? Where he's just hit 80s?
But again, he has taken the responsibility that I feel most writers should. In the respects that if you're still alive and somebody wants to make your story into a movie, which is great, I'm so happy for you, it's your responsibility to keep... the director on your terms and say
Ernest Cline was credited. He was
a screenwriter. Yeah,
I know.
Scriptwriter. But then to throw another monkey wrench into this pile, these big blockbuster movies. I mean, how much of it can we even? The corporate has to come out of this. Because it's their bottom line that they're working towards, and that's the only bottom line that matters. Your art, your script, your performance, none of that fucking matters as long as you make money for me. And it's how much of the blame on a bad movie right now, can you lay on the artists when you have a corporate dipshit breathing down your neck saying, this is the actor we want, this is the scriptwriter we want, this is the director, you guys just figure it the fuck out.
Well, now you're talking about Warner Brothers and all the DC movies.
Yeah, seriously. You had it, and you fucked it up.
Wonder Woman was the first DC movie in quite a while.
That was decent?
That was
not directed by Zack Snyder.
Well, there's that, but it also that they took a risk, and they allowed the director and the writer to do what they needed to do. They got a great cast, and they put together a good movie.
Yeah.
Here's why, at least I think why, Wonder Woman was allowed to succeed, because there wasn't a competing female superhero for them to compare it to. With every DC movie since Man of Steel, there has been a Marvel movie coming out just before or just after. DC gets early reviews, or they even see it, and they immediately go in for reshoots because our movie has to be as good as this one, and it completely butchers it. The prime example is Suicide Squad came out after Deadpool.
By the way, she was amazing in I, Tonya.
Oh, I know she was, yeah.
So
she's
bad.
Fucking amazing.
So I disagree with the fact that it had to do with gender, because I think people have really been able to separate that when it comes to these big superhero movies. I think it just has to do with the fact that these characters are so beloved.
People can, but corporations can't.
Well, and on top of that, you got Deadshot versus Deadpool.
I gotcha.
And
Here's what happened with this, and this I've read a bunch of articles on it. So Deadpool comes out, low budget, R-rated superhero movie,
mm-hmm.
first of its kind,
mm-hmm.
and it blows the roof off, makes bank.
Oh yeah.
Suicide Squad is set to follow 3 months after, roughly.
Yeah, thereabouts.
By that point, they had already had the trailer out, and the big wigs at Warner go see Deadpool, and they start flipping out because they had already seen the early cut of Suicide Squad, and by all accounts, it was a really dark, good movie.
Right.
I heard it was much better. I've read articles on this too.
Now, what happens is they see Deadpool and they realize that their trailers have all the jokes in them. The rest of the movie is not very funny. They flip out.
Yeah.
People aren't going to see our movie because they're going to see this trailer and it's all the jokes. And so they do all these reshoots. They spend like a couple million dollars for reshoots.
Yeah.
Man,
hack it to shit.
That movie.
Well,
and it bombs and they can't figure it out.
Well,
it's the same thing. It's the same thing that happened with Batman v Superman and ostensibly Justice League. Marvel had the Avengers out.
Well,
and DC's trying to catch up to Marvel. And instead of following Marvel's sort of path,
right.
they try and cut them off at the pass and get their super team out.
Well,
and the problem is no one knows enough about these characters, and they keep recasting them.
Well, and on top
There's no through line with it. And then on top of it, they keep doing reshoots because they keep doubting themselves, and they want more of what Marvel has.
I'm still waiting for DC to sell to Disney so, you know, DC Marvel Studios can start working together, because I talked to you about this. One of the things that's bugged me a lot about the DC movies lately, I do like DC Kongs. I always have. I've always liked the characters. I've always been a fan. I've also been a fan of Marvel characters in general. I never really thought one was better than the other. I just enjoyed them on a blanket. But the problems I'm having with the most recent DC movies, and I talked to you about this, is they take themselves overly seriously. Like,
oh my God, yeah.
It's all so bummer. I mean, everything about the DC movies, even the Wonder Woman movie, fell prey to it in the respects that there wasn't any part of this where they didn't feel like they had to be so superhero serious all the fucking time. And again, it was one of those things where I loved about the new Marvel movies, especially everything from Iron Man and on, because let's face it, that really was the start. But it was one of those things where it's like the Marvel movies knew that these were comic books, that they were meant to be entertaining. They were meant to be fun. Yes, we're talking about superheroes. They can do extraordinary things. They are just a cut above normal humanity. But that doesn't mean they have to act like it. Let's make them more relatable. Somebody you could talk to, maybe, if, you know, you didn't know who they were, and just sitting on the subway next to Captain America. Well, if you didn't know who the fuck he was, he's just a normal jackoff on the fucking And it's like, there was a relatability with the characters that have come through Marvel, especially in these movies, that people adhere to a lot easier because they're fun. They enjoy their stories. They enjoy their characters, and they allow them to have fun with it. DC is like, no, Batman's brooding, sad, and bummed out because his mom and dad died when he was a kid, and he's a multimillionaire who doesn't know what else to do with his life. He's a fucking playboy. Let him be one. Let him have fun. Show him being a smartass and a misogynistic pig. You know what? To some degree, we can relate to that. Right? I mean, they're one in the same. It's Superman. Okay. He has these abilities. Has always tried to keep it quiet. We get that. But he's Clark Kent. He's a dork. He's a nerd. And he plays it up well enough to fool everybody in his office. Show us a bit more of Clark Kent being a dork. Because Superman is confident. He's powerful. He's strength. He is a personification of Savior. Clark Kent is a dork. Show us him. Give us a little bit more of Kent. Maybe a little less of,
yes, I'm Superman. I am the baddest motherfucker on the planet.
Here's something that I've noticed with the DC movies is that their worlds are ostensibly dark. Yeah. And if you look at the comics, the only one that's actually dark is Batman. So they've set everything in, like, Batman's world. But here's the thing. If you watch Man of Steel, it's kind of a bright film. It's very a very bright. Sunny film. It's very Norman Rockwell in its feel. And I love that.
Exactly. See, that was a good movie for me. I loved Man of Steel. I was happy about
it. And the great thing with Man of Steel is... The great thing with Man of Steel is you get Superman, but you also get Clark Kent.
Exactly.
Because here's Superman trying to learn about himself.
Yeah.
And exactly, how to deal with, oh my God, I do have these superpowers, and I am meant for something bigger. What can I do with these superpowers?
Ta-da.
I can fly.
Holy shit.
Sure, once I get the hang of it, right? I can fly. And the problem I had with Batman v Superman is that we didn't have a second Superman movie where he's still learning his powers. When you end Man of Steel, he still has no idea of what his limitations are.
Yeah.
And suddenly, here he is fighting Batman and saving the world and go, you know what you should have done? You should have done a second Batman where he is facing the Congress, because there's a lot of doubt about this guy now.
Yeah.
Our introduction to him was when his people came and just started destroying our planet.
Yep, there he is.
So let's kind of, you know, put it on this guy. Let's hold him to task and then have something major and only Superman can fix it.
But honestly, I want it even a bit more.
Build the trust with Superman. At the same time, let's find out how Superman is trying to fit in his new life
human being,
as Clark Kent, and have it, you know, have those worlds collide, and how does he deal with it? How does he juggle it?
And that's where we've been getting more wins on the Marvel side, in my opinion, because we are exploring those aspects of their life. So we give a shit.
Exactly.
One of the big issues that I had as well is there was absolutely zero setup for Lex Luthor.
Yep.
Because according to the comics, at least the new re-release of their comeback, they gave Kent and Luthor a backstory together as being buds at one time. Luthor was kind of an outcast.
So they're ripping off Smallville?
In the respects, but Luthor was kind of an outcast because he knew he was smarter than everybody, so it pissed him off.
So pretty much Smallville.
But he didn't have the connections like he did in Smallville. And this was them as teenagers.
So Smallville.
Smallville ripped off DC, sweetheart. This happened a lot long ago. But the idea is that by accident,
I'm just gonna go see you calling sweetheart, because I know what I mean.
By accident, what ends up happening to their friendship, though, is they're kind of buddies at school for the most part. And Kent goes over to his house because, you know, they're just kind of hanging out. He goes, hey, let me show you something really cool I found. And he shows him a block of kryptonite he found. He doesn't know what it is. He just knows that it's emanating a shit ton of power. Well, as soon as Kent gets close to it, he starts kind of sweating and feeling weak and dizzy and shit like that.
This episode of Smallville!
And Luthor takes it as an insult to his direct person, like, oh, you're just like everybody else. I thought you were different. Fuck you. Well, when they struggle, the shack explodes, Kent goes off, and is able to actually regain some consciousness, and he's under the impression Luthor's dead. But what happens to Luthor is he just changed a little bit, and he disappeared under the radar up until they become adults, and that's when they first show up. Is Luthor is basically in charge of a large corporation, and his whole idea is he wants to implant the notion that Kryptonians are evil by all means. So he uses kryptonite to simulate a Kryptonian army attack on the planet. And he points the finger at Superman going, these are your people, and I think I'm the only one who can stop you. And so he tries to play that. But at the same time, we got nothing.
Hey, Samantha's interrupting.
Sorry.
No. I'm sorry to interrupt. I feel bad. But we are over our hour, and my dogs are waiting at the door. So if you guys keep going, that's fine. But I do have to cut out.
No, we should cut out. So
DC, you suck balls. Marvel, kick ass.
Get into in deep. In depth.
And I think we should wait till Jim, because he's kind of a comic nerd. Bryce probably doesn't give a flying fuck.
Probably not. but we miss you guys, you jerk.
So we'll see about next week. I'm still sitting on movies that we need to recast.
Send them out to us.
Yes, I will. As soon as I know if everyone's going to be there.
I don't know. I might not show up that day.
Everyone who's important will show up that day. But until then, thanks for listening. Samantha, you rock. Danny,
Man, fuck you.
I love you too.
Aww.
Well, thank you.
If that's the only thing, I feel pretty good.
Here's hoping.
Bye, guys.
All right, have a good one.
Thank you for listening to Not Another Podcast. There are so many places for you to find us outside of www.notanotherpodcast.com. For instance, you can find us on Facebook at Not Another Podcast. You can also find us on Tumblr at www.notanotherpodcast.tumblr.com. You can also find me, Samantha Stark, on Twitter at SamanthaStark3. And you can find James on Twitter as well under James Spooky, spelled with an I-E, not A-Y. And you wanted it, you asked for it, you got it. You can also find us now on iTunes under, you guessed it, Not Another Podcast. We'll talk to you soon. Peace out, Not Another Podcasters.